Jesus walks on the water. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately, he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. When they had crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret and anchored there. As soon as they got out of the boat, people recognized Jesus. They ran throughout that whole region and carried the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages, towns, or countryside, they placed the sick in the marketplaces. They begged him to let them touch him, even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed.
The disciples had been having a busy and exciting time. Jesus had sent them out to teach and heal people with the authority that he had given them, and they had come back and reported to him all that they had done and taught. But Jesus was mobbed with people. There were so many people around him that the disciples didn't even have a chance to get anything to eat. So Jesus said that they should go away with him to a quiet place where they'd be able to rest. But as they were leaving in a boat to go to a solitary place, many people saw them leaving, recognized them, and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. And then when Jesus saw such a large crowd, instead of sending them home so he and the disciples could rest, he had compassion on them and began teaching them many things. And then he gave them food. 5,000 men plus women and children fed with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. What an amazing time the disciples had been having. Well, Jesus then told the disciples to get into the boat and go ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. But as they were in the boat, a storm blew up on the Sea of Galilee. It was such a strong headwind, and the disciples were straining at the oars, trying to move forward, but unable to make any headway. They were stuck in the middle of the lake with the wind against them. I read that this particular type of storm is unique to the Sea of Galilee, and that the fishermen on the Sea of Galilee were really afraid of it. It was probably the same type of storm that we see in Mark chapter 4, when Jesus was asleep in the boat with the disciples. And Mark tells us that on that occasion, the disciples thought they were going to die. So here the disciples found themselves in really serious trouble. And they found themselves in trouble quite quickly. They just participated in one of the most miraculous things you could imagine, the feeding of the 5,000. And they hadn't just been witnesses to it, they'd participated in it. They touched the bread, they distributed the fish, distributed to thousands of people with 12 baskets left over. I imagine them being on a real high as they set off on their boat trip. But that wouldn't have lasted long, when the storm hit and they became terrified. And this time, Jesus wasn't with them. He had stayed behind to dismiss the crowd, and then he went up on a mountainside to pray. But he saw the trouble the disciples were in. He saw that they were straining at the oars, making no progress. And so he went to them, walking on the water. So what are you picturing, I wonder? You'll be picturing the disciples straining at the oars in the midst of this terrible storm. And picture Jesus walking on the lake. But when I thought about it, I realized that somehow my picture of Jesus has always been of him walking on a calm surface of the lake, as though the disciples were in a storm, but Jesus was walking on flat, calm water. And actually, I'm pretty sure it wasn't like that. I'm pretty sure that Jesus was not just walking on the water, he was walking on extremely stormy water. He was walking in the midst of the very same storm that the disciples were encountering. But he didn't just immediately calm the storm. He didn't just go straight to the disciples and get into the boat with them. He was going to walk past them. They saw him and they thought it was a ghost, and they cried out because they were terrified. And immediately Jesus spoke to them. He told them not to be afraid, but to have courage. He climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. We've been thinking these past few services over Advent and Christmas about the God who comes. The God who came as a baby at Bethlehem. The God who will come again with justice and righteousness at the end of the age. And the God who comes to us every day. And here, I think, is another picture of the God who comes. And the first thing we notice is that he saw them. He saw that his followers were in trouble. He was up the mountain praying. He could have had his back turned to them and his eyes closed. But no, he saw what was happening to them, because he is the God who sees. One of my favorite verses is in 2 Chronicles chapter 16. The eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. Way back in the early chapters of Genesis, we find a story of how Abraham's wife Sarah mistreated her servant Hagar. She mistreated her so badly, in fact, that even though Hagar was pregnant, she fled into the wilderness to escape. While she was there, an angel of the Lord appeared to her and comforted her and told her to go back to Sarah, and that the child she was expecting was to be called Ishmael. Hagar gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. "You are the God who sees me," she said. "I have now seen the one who sees me." God saw Hagar's circumstances. He saw her distress, her misery. God is a God who sees us. It is one of the names of God, one of his key characteristics. In Hebrew, El Roy, the God who sees. He is not blind. He has not turned away his face. He sees what is happening to us our circumstances, our troubles. He sees and he knows. His eyes range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. He sees us and he comes to us. Jesus could have stayed where he was, up on the mountaintop, and just prayed for the storm to calm down. We see in this miracle and the other miracle where he calmed the storm that he is Lord over the wind and the waves, and so he could have stayed there where he was praying and prayed for his disciples, but he didn't. He went to them. He comes to us, this God who comes. In coming to the disciples, he came in the midst of the very storm they were facing. Jesus knows all about the storms of life. He has encountered them too, even to death on a cross. But he was going to pass them by. Why? Well, I think it's because he's not a God who forces himself on anyone. Because he has given us free will to respond to him or not. Mary, Joseph, the shepherds, and the wise men all experienced the God who came to them, and they all responded with heartfelt obedience and worship. What about us? Is there any possibility that we might let Jesus pass us by today? Whatever he might be saying to us today, will we respond to him? So what caused him to turn and get into the boat with the disciples? It was their cry. They were terrified and they cried out. They didn't hold a prayer meeting. They didn't spend time trying to find the right words to use to ask Jesus to help them. They just cried out because they were scared. Scared because they thought they saw a ghost. And that cry was enough. Jesus not only sees our troubles, he hears our cries. The cries that we speak and the cries of our hearts. So he got into the boat. He got into the place where the disciples were. He entered into their circumstances. He entered into their pain and confusion and uncertainty. He is Emmanuel, God with us. The God who came to this earth to experience for himself all that this fallen world throws at people. He brought his love and care and provision into their circumstances and their weakness. And the storm died down. I love that New Year, when we look ahead, comes right after Christmas, when we have been thinking about Emmanuel, God with us. I have no doubt that there will be storms in the coming year, storms in the world around us, storms in our lives. Maybe there are storms now. Maybe you feel now as though you are straining at the oars, making a huge effort, getting worn out with it and getting nowhere. Maybe you're scared, afraid of what is going on in your life, afraid of what the future holds, afraid of the storm that is battering you. He sees you, so cry out to him and let him come alongside you. Let him into the storm of your life. He may possibly not change the outward circumstances, but let him calm the storm in your heart. He is the God who said, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." The peace that comes in his presence, the peace that is beyond any understanding, peace even in the storms of life, because he is with us. Let's pause there as we sing Cornerstone. My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. What happened next? As soon as they got out of the boat, Jesus again got mobbed by people. People ran throughout the whole countryside, and they brought sick people on mats so that Jesus could touch them. Everywhere he went, in towns and villages all throughout the region, they put the sick in the marketplaces, and they begged Jesus to let them just touch even the edge of his cloak, and everyone who touched him was healed. Everywhere he went, people ran to him. There were 5,000 on the mountainside at one time, 4,000 at another. It was hard for him to get away from the crowds. They knew that one touch from him would transform their lives. Like the woman who had been bleeding for years, who said, "If I just touch the hem of his garment, I will be whole." There's a big thing today about wellness. Look online or in magazines, and there is all sorts of advice about how to attain wellness. Not just health, but a sense of well-being, a sense of inner peace. People are desperate to achieve that. But I don't believe people will find it in any or all of the advice that is dished out. I don't believe there can be true well-being without Jesus, because true well-being needs to start with forgiveness. You can't be at peace in your soul if you're struggling with guilt. Until you come to him and receive his forgiveness, you can't begin to know that sense of well-being that people crave. The people who crowded to Jesus recognized him. They realized their own need. They believed that Jesus could meet that need, and they were determined to grasp the opportunity of him being there. He is the one who makes us whole. But in these verses, we don't so much find people coming with their own troubles. I'm sure there were many of them. But these verses tell us about people who brought others. People who carried the sick, who brought their friends so that Jesus could touch them. Like the four people who let down their friend through the roof of a house so that Jesus could heal him, these people carried others, and they placed them where Jesus could see them, and they asked him to touch them. And so at the start of this new year, as we think about our need to continually invite Jesus into the boat of our lives, that he would bring his peace into our hearts, may we also redouble our commitment to pray for one another, to bring our friends and family to Jesus, so that their lives too would be touched and transformed by him. Only in him is peace and love and grace. Only in him is fullness of life. And we sing, in heavenly love abiding, no change my heart shall fear, and its